whenever we start recording and we do this, the moment of silence, I always feel like I need to belch. So, and it's like, I don't know if it's like psychosomatic or what, but I'm always like, oh God, I'm going to belch during the moment of silence.
Because it's the one time you have to be quiet. You're like,
right.
It's like when you're like in a very solemn moment at like church or a funeral or something, and you suddenly have an attack of the giggles.
Oh boy.
I'll give you one better. Brita, you're Catholic, so you went through confirmation.
Of course.
I don't know how it was where you were and when you were, but we had like practices. Like,
yes.
And so here's the scene. It's our little Catholic church in my hometown. It's about 7 o'clock at night on a Friday night. It is literally the priest, the deacon, and whatever there were, 12, 15 confirmandes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a moment of silence. And who lets go with the Force 10 pants buster fart?
Oh, no.
I mean, literally a fart in church.
Oh, no.
We're leaning forward on the kneeler.
Oh, no.
And nice reverb right off the wooden.
Oh, my God.
Did you turn and glare at the guy next to you?
Oh, absolutely froze. Like, maybe they won't notice me.
Yeah, nobody will notice.
And you know, it's like I had people come up to me decades later. Like, you know, I farted in the church.
Oh, yeah. My God. And you had no dog to blame it on. And...
Yeah, no dog. There was literally like 50 people in this entire.
Oh, my God.
So,
how old were you when you got confirmed?
13?
Yeah. I remember it was like 8th grade, and then they changed it. It was like, oh, man, we've got like 2 more years of CCD. God damn it. Like, you know, I'm sure I was like 14 or 15.
What the hell is CCD?
Jay knows. PSR, CCD.
There you go with your damn acronyms again.
Doctrine. It's the
Catholic Catechism. I don't know.
Cataclysm?
I blocked it all. Yes, it was. I don't remember. Catholic.
Let's see.
Oh, man.
No, used to be a hell. Minority.
Community College of Denver. No.
No. No. Are you Googling it, too?
Confraternity of Christian Doctrine.
Is that what it is? Holy cow.
Good Lord. No wonder they call it CCD.
Or Sunday School.
Or PSR, which is Parish School of Religion. Yeah.
Every other religion, it's like Sunday School.
No,
it's a thing. We all hate it. And, like, I remember growing up, it was one of those, like, Sunday mornings would be the only time during the entire week I'd be quiet, because if my parents didn't wake up, I didn't have to go.
Oh, geez.
So.
Yeah, we had CCD on Saturdays, which sucked. Because, like, you are in school all day, all during the week, and then CCD on Saturdays.
Yeah, and then church on Sundays, so.
Horrible.
So we got, when my kids started in CCD, the church we went to was actually really smart. There was a 9 o'clock mass, and CCD started at 10:15.
Hey!
So it was like you got everything done in one compact.
Yeah, that's good.
It was Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. You know, we did mass 9 to 10, 10 to 10:15. They had, you know, donuts in the rectory, and that was awesome. You go get a couple of donuts, fill them full of sugar, and hand them off to the catechism. And then, boom.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd run up to the warehouse store, get the shopping done for the week, and, you know, it was very efficient. I liked that. We moved down here, and it was like, oh, yeah, we have it. It's either Sunday afternoon or Monday night. You're like,
yeah.
Now, in all fairness, I do remember that CCD, when we were up in Mass, only went through 6th grade Sunday morning, and then when you were in the later grades, it was late. So
yeah, it was like in the evening.
Yeah. So it would have changed anyway. So
yeah,
but it's all done. My daughter's confirmed.
Yay! You're good.
Has been launched. They're adults. They're much like their dad, and they have zero interest in going to church. So.
Yes, well, they did it.
yes, we've done it. I've raised them to adulthood and life is good. So now that we've discussed why I'm going to hell.
yeah, it's weird because it's like I was raised in a Methodist church.
Is that like Rhythm Methodist or is that like...
Which is like...
Catholic light.
It's like Catholic light. Yeah, it's like they still do communion, but they don't believe in transubstantiation, which makes me wonder why the hell do they do communion if they don't... It's like they're trying to straddle between Catholicism and Protestantism. It's like the whole... It's like 1 foot in each camp, right? It's very weird. But we had a confirmation class, and they have a confirmation. It's not the big deal they do in the Catholic Church, but still, it's very strange. And of course, growing up in Texas, everybody's a Baptist.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So.
Except us and lots of Koreans are Methodists for some reason. I don't know. It's like weird.
Yeah, Vietnamese are Catholic. Well, Vietnamese being Catholic makes
sense.
Well,
yeah, because of the French thing.
The French, yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of Chinese are Catholic, too, because of the missionaries that went over there.
Ah.
I think I read somewhere though that the biggest in China is Mormons.
Really?
I think it's the Mormons.
Rastafarians. That's
they're right. Big in China. I have to look this up to make sure I'm not talking shit. But I read somewhere that
going to the making their pilgrimage to the temple in Utah. Suddenly very expensive.
Yeah,
lots of Mormons in China.
Interesting.
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah.
I wonder how many.
Because it's really hard to have multiple wives when the men outnumber the women. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I
wonder if they do that over there.
Multiple wives?
Yeah.
They have to reverse.
How could they?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
There'd be like one guy with all the wives.
I mean, the only reason they don't hear is because it's against the law. And they had almost fought a war over it.
Right.
So, you know, in another country.
Mormon are not Amish. They do not adhere to the nonviolence. Common misconception.
Right, yeah, which is... Like I said, they almost had a war over it. They had to call out the army. The army had to go out and basically take over, invade Utah to enforce the law against polygamy.
It's such a weird thing.
It's like, why would you want more than one? I mean, seriously. Yeah. I mean, no offense to the females, but you know, I'm kind of like, you know, there's... You know, why would you want more than one of either? You know, why would you want more than one husband?
I would not.
Or okay. Why would you want more than one wife? I can't even imagine the.
I would not want more than one husband. I wouldn't. Because.
You'd have two people telling you go to make him a sandwich.
Wow. Anyway,
wow,
nice.
Alex. No. The reason why is because I'd have to repeat myself.
Four times.
Four times instead of twice, or like, you know, eight times instead of four times, because you know there'd be multiple people either not hearing me, because I think you all are at a certain age, you all kind of lose some hearing and you don't have anyway, or you're ignoring us. So, yeah, I the having to repeat myself thing makes me insane. Like when our friend Schwartz comes to visit, I have to repeat myself twice. Once for Mike, once for Schwartz. And it's just painful.
It's Brita's concept of hell.
It is.
A room full of husbands.
Oh my God. Like, same. Maybe, you know. I don't know. You all have your purposes, and you're very handy to have around. However, having to have conversations, and then, I mean, not even having to repeat myself, but, like, there's this weird... there's this, like, weird thing that happens where I'm having a thought, and I'm thinking of a thing, and I try to relay my thought to you, male person, and you all kind of, like, look at me like, what is she talking about? And to me, it's completely clear. Like, I have, like, this, you know, direct thought, and I want to convey it to you, and I say the thing, and you kind of look at me like I'm speaking a different language, and I'm like, what is happening here? Like, are we... Yeah. Have you guys tuned out already?
Nope. I'm sorry. Saying something?
Oh!
Oh, Jay. Jay, you just went on Brita's list.
Just repeat everything you just said two more times, please. The next time I'm not going to pay attention.
It's exhausting. It is exhausting. And you see those old married couples that have been married for like 50 years, and they, people are always like, they're so cute. They don't need to talk anymore. They're so in tune with each other. They don't really, they know what each other is thinking. No, bitch, we're just sick of talking to each other. We're sick of, like, repeating ourselves, and just go to your man cave, you know. Let me know when you're hungry.
Alan, do you have a man cave, or is your entire place a man cave?
Yeah, it's my whole house.
It's the cat cave.
Cave. I just get to live here because I have thumbs.
Because you're gonna.
The big advantage is the cats don't care if I walk around naked. So, yeah.
Oh, they care. They care.
Have you noticed a substantial rise in the catnip? I just can't get the image out of my head, man. I just picture Cosmo on a bender. Oh, God, no.
Oh, God, my eyes. You know what I've noticed about cats, though? They will not sit on your lap if you're wearing shorts. And if they have to touch your, like, bare skin with their toes, my cats will not sit on my lap if I'm wearing shorts. Because, like, apparently naked human skin is just repulsive.
It's lava.
They will not. Ronan will, like, if I'm sitting on the sofa and I'm wearing a pair of shorts, he will make every effort to keep every toe bean on, like, my little edge of the shorts so that he doesn't have to touch my skin. It's kind of like I'm a little offended.
You're offended. He's the one that can't, you know, that's got to avoid your skin.
I know. God, how dare I?
Yeah.
So, anyway, we've kind of blown 20 minutes on nothing.
It's a show about nothing.
It's a show about nothing. Anything happened this week?
Speaking of nothing.
Anything at all?
We had a manhunt in my neighborhood.
Oh.
That was kind of exciting.
Did you just assume their gender?
Yeah. Actually, no, because I looked it up and it was two guys. Apparently the cops stopped a car out on the feeder road to the highway at the edge of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And, two guys got out of the car and went running off and, you know, hopping fences into the neighborhood. So they called in, you know, the cavalry. And I'm like, you know, cause I'm sitting in my office in the front of the house and I'm, you know, I'm kind of doing work and it's getting toward, you know, the end of the day. So I'm sort of like, I'm spending more time staring out the window than anything else. And I keep seeing these cop cars driving by. I'm like, what the hell is going on out there? And then I hear this helicopter overhead. I'm like, damn. So I'll go walking outside and, this cop car comes cruising by and I kind of waved at him and he stopped and rolled down his window. I said, what's going on? Is there something I need to worry about? And he goes, yeah. He goes, we're looking for two guys they're going door to door a couple of streets over and I'm cruising the streets to make sure they don't, you know, escape the perimeter, you know, see, so, you know, he can spot them, you know, running, you know, down the street or something. But, they had, man, they had cops, they had county cops, they had precinct constables, they had everybody out there. They had a police helicopter hovering overhead.
What about cops? Was cops there? Was the music playing?
No.
What?
No, there wasn't. But they were serious. And I was like, I said, well, I'm going to go in my house and lock the doors. And the guy goes, good idea. I'm like, all right. Well, but I don't know, about 6 o'clock, the helicopter went away and the cops stopped driving up and down the street. So I figured they either caught him or gave up. So
nuts to this.
Yeah. So that was exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember one time coming back, this is way back when we used to live in an apartment, and we'd gone out to dinner, we came back, and there were literally like 12 cop cars, all with lights on, and there were cops everywhere, shining lights, flashlights, walking around, and like, we passed by one, and you know, excuse me, officer, what's going on? And she goes, nothing. I'm like, really?
Are you sure?
Like, I'm pretty sure that nothing would not require a dozen cars.
Training exercise.
Yeah, you know, like, well, okay, fine. If I see somebody like about to hit you, I'll assume it's nothing.
Well, fortunately, if you're not a criminal, the cops are pretty friendly here. You know,
the big if, though.
Yeah, well, you know.
Everyone's a criminal, Alan. 3 felonies a day.
Yeah, not those kind. So, yeah, that was fun. That was the excitement of my day.
Always good when there's a manhunt that's not centered around you. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Exactly. Yep. So I did not step out in the front yard and set up a perimeter and, you know, put out, you know, known distance stakes and
set up claymores,
mount the machine gun on a tripod and, you know, put up sandbags.
What are those little spiky things that people can step on?
Caltrops.
Legos.
Yeah.
Legos. Just scatter Legos.
Scatter
everywhere.
Legos everywhere. Yeah, that'll do it.
All done.
Ouch.
Yes, Caltrops. Or roofing nails.
Yeah, either one.
Those are good because you get tetanus too.
Ugh, yeah. Jay had a topic, I think.
Jay did have a topic.
Oh, I was going to bring up the topic that Alan had posted about the polar bears.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's speaking, we were speaking of nothing. The nothing was the polar bears were not dying of climate change.
Right.
Which is... This is what climate change looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing was completely bogus.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with climate change.
And you know, the science is settled. If the science is settled, why do you have to lie?
Well, I love the quote in the article because they were talking about, you know, National Geographic and, you know, they finally admitted that it's fake news and blah blah blah, and the photographer said, oh yes, we lost control of the narrative, and okay, but the line that was interesting to me was photographer Paul Nicklin and I are on a mission to capture images that communicate the urgency of climate change. Documenting its effects on wildlife hasn't been easy. Maybe because there isn't any.
Yeah.
I mean, if you
so
can't...
So what was the deal with this particular polar bear?
It had, like, the mange or something. It was just some sick polar bear, you know, walking along. And they took a picture of it and pasted it across the internet, you know, and it got, like, viewed by 2.5 billion people.
You know, I when this whole, like, global warming, polar bear, ice caps melting thing came out, children, like school children, were indoctrinated with this stuff at school. Like, they all had to watch the movie and they all talked about global warming, and like small children like had nightmares. They have like psychological trauma. Like, they were all like really stressed out and worried about the polar bears and how do we save the polar bears, and they were really harmed by all this. And now it comes out it's not true.
Well, it wasn't, you know, anybody with half a brain knew it wasn't true when it came out. But the National Geographic, you know, they took this picture of this poor polar bear that, you know, whatever it had wrong with it, and you know, pasted it across their magazine as, you know, this is what climate change looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and you know, and then they're like, oh, well, you know, we're trying to.
I don't understand. Well, I understand why they're doing it, about why they're saying it's all caused by human activity. I understand, because they want to control people and they want to make money.
Sure.
You know, yay. But I mean, they're neglecting history. You know, yes. There was a point in history, minus like the Industrial Revolution, where Greenland was actually green.
Yep.
And human beings had nothing to do with that.
Right.
And it's so strange that the liberals, like, they claim to be like the party of science.
Yeah, they used to grow grapes for wine in England.
Yeah.
And then they had frost fairs on the Thames.
Right.
And now they don't anymore. I mean, there are natural variations. And,
yes, of course.
You know, I mean, do humans affect the environment? Of course they do. Does the climate change? Of course it does. I mean, nobody with half a brain would deny that. But the prescription of cause and effect, and, you know, we need to put the entire world under a single government with us in charge in order to stop this thing, is complete bullshit.
Yeah. We need to institute CAFE standards that the average mileage for an American car fleet is 50 miles per gallon. It's completely unattainable using any technology we currently own. And we've got what was it? It was like 2030. It was not all that far off.
No.
Mm.
Well, we were supposed to all be driving electric cars by then. Or walking, or riding, you know, the mythical public transportation.
Sitting in our caves.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing is ridiculous. And on top of that, if you look at the United States has decreased its carbon emissions radically without doing a damn thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2025.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, and tie that in with what we said, what was it, last week or the week before, we were talking about all the trash. No, it was last week. The 95% of the plastic trash in the oceans comes from Africa and Asia. I mean, you know, it's...
And the biggest polluters are China and India.
Yeah.
Which were specifically exempted from the Kyoto Accord.
Right. So, you know, if you're serious...
Well, it's right along with the renewable energy.
Oh, yeah.
What happened? Let's get more wind power. Let's get more solar power. Hey, solar power, we can get cheap solar panels from China, but they compete with Solyndra. So let's write a tariff in on Chinese solar panels. Nobody ever talked about that. That these affordable solar panels, you know, the news likes to make a shit ton of noise about Trump and the tariffs that Trump is levying. Nobody ever said, wait a minute, if we're supposed to be pushing green power,
right,
levying tariffs on Chinese solar panels, don't you want people buying more solar panels? And by keeping them inexpensive, doesn't that encourage more people to use them? But that would involve, that would questioning St. Obama, so...
Well, plus the whole solar panel thing is a boondoggle anyway. So you get solar panels and the payoff is 30 years. You know, what are the odds that those solar panels are actually going to last at their peak performance for 30 years? You know what the odds are? Zero. Because they don't. you know, and who's going to go up on your roof and clean them and clean the dust and crap off of them? You know, the whole thing's ridiculous. It's, and it's, you know, it's just like those wind turbines everybody's putting up everywhere that cost more to make than they ever generate in electricity. And the only reason anybody makes any money off of it is because of government subsidies. You know, it's, talk about inefficient as hell.
Well, there is one group that makes money off them. It's the guys that go and repair them when they break, because they break rather frequently.
Or catch on fire and fall over.
Now, I don't understand why we don't make things a little more efficient and position solar panels directly under the windmills. And that way, when birds fly into them and get chopped up, you fry them right up. You could have a Chick-fil-A. You could have like a condor fillet every windmill. See, we're always thinking, folks.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
We're seeing the world problem.
But the problem is, you know, it goes back to the whole lying thing. If you have to lie to get people to get onto your side, then what are you accomplishing? You know, it's like global warming is such a serious problem. Why? Well, because it is. Okay, why? Well, because it is, because we say so.
Hater.
You know, and then they have to lie about everything. They can't just be honest and straightforward and say, you know, the climate changes. Okay, the climate changes. It does. Okay. But that doesn't give you the opportunity to take over control of everything and, you know, and run the world the way you want to. You know, it's just like gun control. You know, they have to lie about it. Because there's, you know, if they told the truth, they wouldn't have an argument. It's just like, you know, it's, and socialism. You know, look at Venezuela.
The shining example of Venezuela.
Yeah, the guy that was the president of the party there.
Yep.
Came out and goes, yep, it's all our fault. We screwed it up. But then, you know, the reason he screwed it, you know, it's like it's not socialism's fault. They just did it wrong or something.
I don't know.
I think
it's pretty revealing that anybody came out and said anything about, oh, it's a failure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're eating the zoo animals.
Oh yeah.
Something has gone terribly wrong.
Well, they did a poll and said that 29% of Democrats incorrectly believe the individual has more power than the government in a socialist system.
Wow. What?
29% of Democrats
incorrectly
believe the individual has more power than the government in a socialist system.
Wow. Blame the schools.
Because they lie about everything.
Wow. That's shocking to me. I mean, like, I can't even think about their thought process. You know, if you ask them, okay, well, socialism, you know, who is in control of all the money?
Well, there is no money. They're idiots. They've been lied to their entire lives. They don't know anything.
Oh my Lord.
They don't know any history. They don't teach them anything in school anymore. They don't take civics class. They don't understand. They don't learn how the government works. They don't learn what their rights are. They don't do any sort of comparison like we used to do. Even, you know, when I was in school, it was like, you know, where you look at the different types of governments and you know, what they are and what they do. They don't do that anymore. So the kids have no idea about anything.
You guys have kids in schools.
Yeah. I asked my daughter, you know, and she's, you know, we're watching like history shows on TV and stuff. And she's like, they don't teach us this in school. And I'm talking like fundamental stuff. And like I'll mention something in passing and she'll be like, how do you know that? And I was like, I went to school. And she goes, they don't teach us that in school.
Wow.
You know, and yeah, it's crazy. They don't read books either. I asked her about that. Her English class, like, so what books, you know, because you have, like, you know, summer reading and you have books you're assigned.
Yeah, like, you read the literature
in school and all that kind of stuff. I asked her, I said, what are y'all reading in class? What are you reading in your English and stuff? And she goes, we don't read anything.
What?
I said, you're not reading, like, Shakespeare or literature or anything? And she said, no. I was like, "Well, what do you do in English class?" And she said something about like writing essays or something. And I was like, "Oh, well." But you know,
you can't write properly unless you read a lot.
Exactly. That's the whole point of reading the classic literature.
That's the whole point.
In English class, so you have a reference
of what good writing looks like.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. And they certainly don't.
The kids in our school system are still reading. They have summer reading stuff to do. And it's they're reading your book, Fahrenheit 451.
Yes.
Somebody also has assigned Brave New World.
Wow.
I know. There's quite a few novels that I was kind of surprised. Great Gatsby is always every year.
Burger.
Yeah, we had to read that.
Yeah.
What about either 1984 or?
Yes, 1984. Mm-hmm.
Because that's like an instruction manual today.
Right. I know, but they are still being assigned 1984. But I was surprised by the Fahrenheit 451. You know, it's kind of, you know. But yeah, the kids are still reading books. There's also scattered in those books are kind of like weird kind of social message books. You know what I mean? Like not like 1984 social message, but like more like, you know, kind of racial stuff. I don't even know. But as a rule, it always seems to me like they're assigning books that to like high school seniors that I would have read in eighth grade.
Yeah.
And it really just, you know, as a librarian, I'm like, ugh, you know.
Okay. I got a question for you, Brita, as a librarian, mm-hmm. do people still read? Like, I remember like when I was a kid, you know, there was and you youngsters may not know anything about this, but it was somewhat scandalous to us at the time. There was a rock band called Steely Dan.
Okay.
And the story went around that the Steely Dan name came from The Naked Lunch.
Okay.
By William Burroughs. And so everybody had to go find the fucking Naked Lunch by William Burroughs, which is really,
yes,
not on anybody's reading list,
right?
But you know, you had to go out of your way to find that book. It was it was actually one of the few books that was like banned in the U.S. at one point. It's definitely on the list of banned books. But do people read like the so-called scandalous bunch? Like the ones I think of that are like, you know, scandalous or like
Lolita.
You know, yeah. Like Lolita or, you know, even the mildly scandalous stuff like Kurt Vonnegut, which is not really scandalous, but you know, it's still like, you know,
yeah. Actually people actually do. We do a send list every day where we pull books every morning and we send them out to like other libraries in the consortium. And occasionally people will like request books that surprise me, like Kurt Vonnegut or like real classics, you know, and I'm like, oh, thank God somebody's reading this still. You know, I always have that feeling like, oh, good, okay. All hope is not lost.
Like, there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or what was the, who, Little House on the Prairie?
Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Uh-huh. That's like, in the children's department.
They're
so.
pulling that out because it's not apparently socially acceptable anymore. That's.
Oh yeah, they changed the name of the award.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. Yeah. The American Libraries Association is like super liberal, as you can imagine.
Well, I know Huckleberry Finn is always on their list of awful books.
People are still reading it. Let me just tell you. People are still reading it.
Well, that's
good. Yeah, people are still reading all sorts of stuff, and it's surprising. And I mean, it's not like as much as like James Patterson, who takes up like a whole, almost a whole stack of the library shelves himself, but yeah, people are still reading lots of classics, and I don't know. It just surprises me. You know, I see somebody like, you know, Edith Wharton. I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody's still reading Edith Wharton. Awesome. You know, that happens. And I don't know who they are. I mean, I often wonder, like, are these like older people like revisiting books that they may have read, you know, in their youth, or is it somebody read something about this book and they think, well, maybe I should, you know, go ahead and read that. But
I mean, I read them mostly when I was a pretentious high school student.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I knew everything and had to be, like, you know, show how smart I was.
Yeah. That's basically why I read, like, you know, all of Dante.
Yeah.
In high school. Yeah. Cause I wanted to be
And what was the other one that, the Faust, damn it.
Yes.
You know the one I'm thinking of.
Goethe?
No, the.
Yes.
The Prince by Machiavelli.
That too.
You know, the one, Goethe?
Goethe, like I said before.
Yeah. All right. Well, see, I've never heard it pronounced.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
I read the translation.
Okay.
Sturm und Drang.
What did he write? Yes, he wrote a thing about Faustus something. Yeah, I read that too.
The deal with the devil.
Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. It's in Goethe? What are you getting?
Goethe. Is it really Goethe?
I believe so. Yeah.
I feel like a dumbass.
I've been saying it wrong
for 50 years.
Wait. Listen. Is it going to play?
No. Oh.
Anyway, there's a pronunciation on Wikipedia. Yeah. If anybody's interested. I'm pretty sure it's Goethe.
But there's no R.
Goethe.
Goethe.
I don't like to say
Goethe.
Wolfgang von Goethe.
Goethe. Yeah.
Can this come through? Hold on.
I hear it.
Yeah, I hear it too.
Goethe.
Goethe. Goethe.
Goethe. Goethe. Spot on. I look at that like Goethe. Goth. I expect it to have.
Yeah, it looks like Goethe or Goethe or something like that.
I think Goethe. I think you should have black lipstick. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
It was Faust. It was the play, yeah. Faust.
Well, you know, it's.
Oh, my God. This is the nerdiest show ever. I am so sorry. So sorry. Actually, I have memories of reading Faust when I was a freshman in college, and I have very clear memories of, like, you know, Brita was in, like, you know, kind of grunge goth phase, and I was, like, in between classes sitting in stairwells reading Faust. So
did you have black lipstick?
I did not have black lipstick, no. Oh,
all right.
But yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay.
I'm trying to think.
Have spiky pants.
What?
Your spiky pants. Jeez, you posted
I did not
Amazon have... stuff.
Oh my. Yeah, on
Amazon. This is like the what the hell?
I'm trying to think of the most pretentious book I've ever read.
Oh God.
Jay, do you have one?
I do.
What?
Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
I read that.
Oh my. I was like, I remember
that was huge. That was a bestseller.
I kind of grok Taoism. I've got the Tao Te Ching. I'm like, I'm all on board with Zen, and I love motorcycles. I powered through that fucking book. Oh my God. I read it.
Is it really about motorcycles?
Oh my
God. Yeah, it is actually.
Well, it's sort of. You've got to be able to do this, and this indicates blah, blah, blah. And like, oh my, the fucking word salad of just everything.
It is the proto-hipsterization of motorcycle.
Yes.
Oh.
Exactly. If it's like on my bookshelf. Like literally, I'm holding it. Who's it? Robert Persig. Yeah, I just, you know, it's like he's on a journey in search of himself, and you know.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is like the epitomes of 70s bullshit,
yeah.
which was Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I read that. I still have a copy of that somewhere.
Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
Ehrlich Bachman.
Oh.
We'll change
next week on Book Talk.
I know. I'm sorry.
We totally went off the rails. We're losing.
You know what would be
fun?
And this is a totally totally nerdy thing. And I hope somebody plays along. Maybe I should do it. Post a picture of your favorite bookshelf.
My favorite bookshelf.
Not you, Alan, because you don't have bookshelves. But like, you know, the one room in my house is like all bookshelves, right? So, I'm gonna post a picture of my favorite bookshelf.
Well, I have one bookshelf
in the Squirrelport group page. You have one bookshelf, but like three books or something?
No, there's more than that.
Okay, but you're an ebook guy.
Yes, I got. At one point I had over 5,000 books, and I got rid of them. And when I converted to ebooks, because, you know, good Lord, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Especially how often you move.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another
story. You don't want to schlep all those books everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. Our house is mostly made out of books, you know. Actually, our library is having a book sale this week, and Mike came to pick me up at work yesterday, and he came a little bit early because the book sale started today, but he came a little bit early last night so he could get a little preview. And so I took him downstairs and on the elevator, and I said, okay, you have 10 minutes, because I was closing up the library. I was like, you have 10 minutes, get whatever you want, and you have to like come up within 10 minutes. He came up upstairs, and he had like a giant armful of books. I was like, oh no, more books in my house. You know, I'm sure the foundation is sinking at this point, you know, because of the weight of all the books.
Yeah, you know, we get into the
whole. But they're like 50 cents a piece at the library book sale.
Yeah. I mean, they're practically disposable at that price.
Oh, if only.
It took me decades to get over the book reverence. In fact, a large part of me is still cringes at the thought of just like throwing away a book. I tell myself it doesn't matter. But still the book reverence inculcated in a young Alan was, you know, by librarians and, you know, like my dad and my you know, teacher, high school teacher, grandparents. And, you know, it was just like this whole book, you know, I remember the book, the lessons on how to treat a book, you know, never lay it face down. Don't, don't tear, you know, don't bend a corner over, use a bookmark, you know, leave it as pristine as you found it. Don't crack the spine. I mean, it's just all this stuff. And, you know, cause you know, it's like, you're like the book acolyte or something. And then, you know, it's like, you know, when I converted to ebooks and started getting rid of books, it was just like, you know, I literally cringed every time I threw out a book, and it was awful. And it's still, to this day, I have, you know, like, you know, it's like I have to force myself to throw one out, but it's like, it doesn't matter, especially like popular fiction or something.
Right. It's and just, I have to tell you that pretty much every book that normal people own in their library book collection exists somewhere else.
Oh yeah.
Either a digital copy or a paperback or a hardback somewhere, or some library has it. It's not like it's the only copy in existence. And that is what is important, because I weed a lot of books out of our collection, and I have to go through a process of, like, I check the catalog to see if anybody else in our consortium, does anyone else own it? Specifically CPL, Cleveland Public Library, because they're the biggest. If they own it, I'm like, okay, well, you know, and ours isn't circulating, you know, how many copies are there? And it's kind of like, we do kind of guard information. You know what I mean? Like, if this is the only copy in the whole system, we're not getting rid of it, because it's precious. It's information, and you never know if somebody is going to use it, right? And that's kind of like our mission. Like, we guard the information. We're the keepers of the information. And but people throwing away books, I know it's hard, and I know it's like you cringe when you do it. But trust me, like, if you're throwing out the James Patterson from 10 years ago, trust me, somebody somewhere has it. It's not like it's a precious thing. It's not, you know, it's not like you're doing a bad thing, because honestly, we throw away books all the time.
But it feels like a bad thing.
It feels like a bad thing. Yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it. But most of the time, it exists somewhere else, and you're fine. It's okay.
Also, old books are a lot of fun to shoot. That's, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, are they? I bet they are.
They make great targets.
Oh, because you can kind of measure like how far the bullet goes, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's once you've hit more than once or twice, you start seeing like paper fly everywhere.
Nice.
And it's environmentally friendly because it's biodegradable.
Right.
What is that website that they test shooting things?
Box of Truth.
Box of Truth. And they did books one time, and it was like pretty shocking how good.
Oh yeah.
You know, how good those pages are stopping bullets.
Yeah. If you're in a shootout in the library, duck behind the stacks.
That's my plan.
You're going to be safe, because the bullets won't penetrate that row of books.
Especially if there's hardcovers.
Oh yeah.
Just saying.
You know, before we go, and I know that we're at the end of the hour, we were talking about ebooks, but now we have e-guns.
Ooh.
I don't know how much Jay can talk about this, but
I can talk about it.
The whole e-gun thing.
It's a first issue then.
It totally is.
I can,
and it's not like 3D printable stuff is like a new thing. The 3D printable guns have been around for quite some time. It's just the thing that just came out this week. It's about how the information can be shared.
Yeah, there's actually somewhat of a history to this that deals with cryptography.
Oh,
because the reason Defense Distributed had to put their downloads on hold was because they violated ITAR,
right?
Which is the International Restrictions on Trade and Arms, or something like that. Whatever it is. Anyway, it's okay. The whole international thing. And when Phil Zimmerman came out with PGP back in the, what was it, back in the 80s, early 90s, I guess. It was in the 90s, I guess. Anyway, PGP is a public key encryption system. And at that time, and probably now, you know, well, actually even now, it is illegal to export encryption technology out of the United States. We have a lot of, the company I work for has a lot of problems with, in fact, all multinational companies that want to do business and secure their network has a huge problem with this, because there are incredible hoops you have to jump through to export encryption technology out of the U.S. into like your subsidiary in China, for instance. The fact that the Chinese have already stolen it for decades doesn't really seem to matter to the government. But anyway, Phil Zimmerman got in trouble with the government because he put the code for PGP on, basically on the, what was the internet, you know, back before the internet was popular. And the government's basically tried to send him to jail for violating ITAR. And, I even had a t-shirt at one point back in like 98, 99 that had PGP in a barcode machine readable format and in Perl script on the front of it. And it was, according to the law at the time, illegal for a foreign national to look at that shirt while I was wearing it.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's how warped and twisted the stupidity of these laws are. Not to forget the fact that the code was out there and they couldn't do anything to stop it. They still had these stupid laws about downloading it. So fast forward, you know, what is it, 30 years? And we've got this, you know, again, oh no, you can't put that file out for download. Let's forget about the fact that the file already exists everywhere in the world for anybody to download that wants it. There are literally countless number of places you can get those files, and they've been added to by all kinds of people. And, you know, the whole thing is ridiculous, but now there's some senator, you know, some judges and, you know, Congress critters grandstanding over this, you know, oh no, we can't have downloadable guns. Well, sorry.
We have them.
That horse, the horse left the barn burnt down, and now there's a vegetable patch growing there. I mean, it's the whole thing is so ludicrous.
And not to mention that every firearm out there that has a patent is in the U.S. Patent Office, which is public domain.
Right. And in with blueprints that any competent machinist can use to make.
Right. You know, it's pure and utter fear-mongering.
Sure, of course it is.
And the whole...
That's all they've got.
Well, yeah, it lies. And, you know, the whole thing is comical because if you're one of the few people that hasn't seen this so-called downloadable gun, it's, you know, if you've ever seen the Liberator pistol from World War II,
mm-hmm.
It's not that good. The Liberator is a better pistol.
It's literally a single shot.
Right.
Not that you can only fire one at a time. It's you and you can't use it again.
It self-disintegrates.
And, you know, it ignores the fact that you need, like, a minimum of $1,000 3D printer and $100 worth of plastic stock.
Right.
To print a one, it's a proof of concept.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure that when the very first, you know, when Daimler-Benz rolled out their very first motor car, people laughed at it and was like, oh, that's cute. It can go 5 miles an hour and can carry two people. Whereas, you know, this carriage with six horses can go 25 miles an hour and carry eight people. You know, they'll never replace it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not what they're saying. It's sure. Oh, gangbangers are going to be making guns in their garage.
Right.
No, they're not.
Yeah, because a gangbanger is going to pass on a $300 street Glock to invest in the infrastructure to print their own pistols. I mean, come on.
I can't see that happening.
It's
And then the other, you know, the flip side of that is these 80% guns where, I mean, you can buy a milling machine that will take your, you can put your 80% lower or your, you know, 80% 1911 receiver or whatever in there, and it'll mill out the two or three spots that, you know, still need to be removed to make it an actual gun. Completely legal. Because you, as has always been the case, you can make your own gun in your own home for your own use.
Yeah.
And always have been able to. You can't sell it. And even giving it away is a really gray. I don't think you can give it away. I think you can
give it to a family member.
Right.
I mean, they're pretty strict. Yeah. It's, you want to make one for you, that's totally fine. You know, and it, like with the 80%.
Right.
I would like to do that once just because I've built a number of AR-15s from, you know, from all the individual parts molecules.
Right.
It would be neat to have one where I finish the receiver.
Yeah.
But even that's more like you push the go button. You know, you've got to program.
You know, you can buy a, I mean, what are lowers going for these days? I mean, are they back under $100?
$30.
All right. 30, 40, less than $50. You can buy a, you know, but an 80% is not much cheaper than that. In fact, some are more expensive.
Well, there's technically more aluminum in them.
Right. And then you have to finish it yourself. And, you know, I mean, you can do it. You can, can do it on a drill press. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do it, but
I'll do it in tools. So it's like artisanal.
You know? you're like my hipster
cheese guns.
It's artisanal AR-15.
But, you know, I mean, there's a reason everybody's not their own gunsmith, right? I mean, it's kind of silly. I mean,
And if you do it wrong, it can explode.
And if you're one of those people that think that you're putting one over on the government by, you know, building a bunch of 80% lowers, you're not at all.
Yeah. If you live in a state that allows private transfers, right, you're way doing it that way.
Yeah. But I mean, not just, that. Yeah. So anyway, it's just, yeah, the whole thing's ridiculous, and it's built on lies, and it's just fear mongering and stirring up ignorance, and
it's energizing bases.
And the media, instead of being, you know, brokers of honest reporting, are jumping in with the, you know, pretended ignorance. In a lot of cases, you know, a lot of these people reporting on this stuff, they know better. They just pretend like they don't. And a lot of them legitimately don't know any better. So, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, malice versus ignorance is, you know,
the age old.
How do you prove it? Rant. Oh, I had one more thing I wanted to mention.
Yes.
You know, there was, our, a listener of the show a few weeks ago was unfriended on Facebook because they didn't bash Trump enough or at all. So they were thus seen as a Trump supporter because they didn't bash Trump. And I had posted something on my Facebook page to the effect of, you know, this is, you know, this is people already don't put bumper stickers on their vehicles because they're afraid of some unhinged leftist, you know, tearing it up or whatever. And you know, they're afraid if they wear their, you know, a MAGA hat or whatever, they'll get beat up or whatever. And I was castigated. Oh no, that doesn't happen. Or the moral equivalent patrol jumped out with the, well, it happens on both sides. Actually, it doesn't happen on both sides. It is actually a purely leftist phenomenon.
There is that that group, though. What is it? The Rude Boys or the shit? They're kind of like the anti-Antifa. I don't want to say rude boys. It's maybe it has a rude boys.
I don't know.
But it's a group of conservative, young conservative men who go out and they're like fighting with the Antifa in the streets.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. I'm talking.
And yes, it is. That was my point. Oh. It's completely different.
Right.
They're completely like their own thing, and they go out seeking this sort of interaction with, you know, and they these are the videos you see online of like, oh, this, you know, conservative guy is beating down a Antifa woman. And I saw a video like this this week.
Yeah.
And it was a dude, like, he, I guess the Antifa or the, what are they called? The Resistance now, or whatever the fuck, Occupy Wall Street or wherever they are, you know. They were kind of like doing a roadblock, and this dude was like just trying to go to work, and he got pissed off and he started fighting. And I don't think he's part of this. I don't know if it's the Rude Boys or
no, he was just I saw the
video. Was just a guy.
He was just a dude.
He was pissed off. And the girl, and I watched the video a number of times, she took the first thing, a swing at him, and she actually had a weapon in her hand, and she was like going at him, and he knocked her ass out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not cool with men hitting ladies, but like, if you go at a dude with a weapon, like, expect to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
And it's shocking to me that women put themselves in that position. But at the same time, women for so long have been like, oh, rah, 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 girl power. You know, you're equal. No, in that circumstance, you are not.
That's actually a strategy.
And yes, I realized it was a strategy. They put the women out front
to provoke.
Because because they are betting on the fact that conservative men will not swing at women.
And if they do,
oh, you're hitting a lady, you're hitting a girl. Exactly. Oh. And it's just the same things that Muslims do with the human shields.
Yep.
The Palestinians with human shields.
How dare you kill civilians and children? Well, if you wouldn't stack them around your rocket launchers, it wouldn't happen.
Right.
Don't hide machine guns in ambulances.
Yeah.
Right. It's reprehensible. It really is just, you know.
So, you know, I've been collecting these. Somebody put a, there was a, who did this? Somebody, Breitbart did this thing, 542 acts of media approved violence and harassment against Trump supporters. And they actually pulled them from the headlines with dates and links.
Wow.
540 since Trump was elected of incidents of liberal derangement and attacking people. The latest one was from your neck of the woods, Jay, the Massachusetts woman who rammed a guy's car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he had a Trump sticker on it. And she was so enraged, she literally intentionally rammed his car with her car.
Right.
Oh.
Because of the sticker.
And then left.
Yeah.
Left the scene. You know, the courage of her convictions.
Yeah.
She was so morally justified in doing this that she took off.
Yeah. So the guy said, she said, you voted for Trump. And he said, I said, yes. And she called me a racist and several other names. And then she repositioned her vehicle and hit his car with hers. And then she left the scene.
Hmm.
Well,
and she was aiming for him. He had to jump out of the way to avoid getting hit.
By the way, the term is Proud Boy.
Oh, okay.
If you want to look it up, it's too much testosterone.
Oh, children.
You know, hey, can I go fight somebody in the street? Awesome. You know, one of those.
All right. Well, testosterone. I have to go lift heavy up.
Yes. I'm going back to the gym tomorrow after like a week and a half off because I hurt my back.
Ooh.
So I'm a little afraid.
Start.
We'll see. I will start slow. Yes. Don't do anything stupid, Brita, which is like, you know, pretty much what I tell myself every day I go to the gym. So,
yeah. All righty. But we will
have fun, buddy.
Yep. We'll be back next week. We have a guest next week. We have a listener guest. So that'll be fun.
Woo-hoo. Okay, cool. All right. Good night.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.